Hello, it's Larry Gunns. How is everyone doing?
Outstanding.
Doing good.
Awesome.
Hey, Larry.
Doing good.
Hello. What's happening? Hope you guys are having a great day. I know I've been having a great day.
Yes, sir.
I've been in the air all day long. I flew out from San Bernardino, California. Got up at 4 o'clock this morning, so I am beat, but I'm here. I'm ready to rock and roll. So, with that, let's just jump right in. I know we got a ton of people. Some people might speak over each other, but just be respectful. If it's your first time, welcome to the new members. We really appreciate your business. We really appreciate you being on here. These are the movers and shakers that are out doing deals, making offers, and getting deals accepted. And I just got an email today from Brian. Is Brian on here today?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, you just got your first offer accepted. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. I'm really proud of you. I'm really excited for you. And we're going to talk in the morning and go over some of that stuff. But I wanted to acknowledge you and your deal because I did get an email from you today about got your first offer accepted. That's awesome, man. You're on your way. So,
I'm excited.
That's great. That is great. Yeah, yeah. So with that, let's just jump right in. Like I said, just people be respectful because we got a lot of people on here tonight. So who would like to jump in with a question?
Harry, John Jackson from Baltimore.
What's up?
It's a great day. My question is concerning comparables.
Okay.
I need to understand how you do comparables based upon rent value.
You find rent comps?
Yes, because here in this market, within a geographical area, if we're talking about houses, a lot of them are not necessarily very similar. You know, you have a lot of different architectures,
right,
and so forth. So maybe the rent comps would be a truer value estimate than comparing the physical sale price of the individual homes.
Okay, so if you're looking for rent comps, you want to find out what a property would potentially rent for. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Rent for and how do you calculate it? I'm familiar with the 1% rule. Is that the same rule that you use?
No. That's kind of, a standard where a house should rent for 1% of what you have in it. Like if you have $50,000 in it, it should rent for $500. But I like the multiple of 2 to 2.5. Instead of one. Most of your like retail buyers, your landlords that don't really know what they're doing, they would probably look at 1%. But having said that, there's a few places you can go to find out the rent comps, and just about all of your websites out there like Zillow and Trulia, they are going to have some rent comps on their page when you go to that address.
Okay.
In other words, what you want to do is whatever the address is, you want to type that in Google. And probably the very first thing that pops up is going to be Street View, Street Map. Next after that is going to be Zillow. And then down a few will be Trulia. You can also look at some of that stuff on RealQuest. If it's a HUD house, HUDHomeValue.com will show the rent comps if it is a HUD house. HUD Home Value will show it. Now, here's the other thing. If you're getting a wide range, like 600 to 1,000, that's a big range right there, okay? So what I would suggest is call up a couple of local property managers and say, hey, I'm looking at buying some investment property in this area, and specifically I'm looking at this house, as long as you're not concerned about them taking your deal, which most property managers wouldn't, but what you could do is say, hey, I'm looking at this house at 125 Oak Street. I'm looking at it as a rental. Can you pull it up? Can you look it up? Can you do a little bit of research on it? Tell me what you think you could rent this house for me for. By the way, what do you charge for property management? Do you have some references? Would you be interested in managing this property for me? What do you think about this area as a rental area? You know, do you have any other areas that you would recommend? Do you have any tired landlords right now that are looking to sell their property? Those are all good questions to ask a property manager.
Okay.
Did that help?
That helped. Now, you mentioned that you do a 2 to 2.5 factor. How does that work into the formula?
Really
you
good.
Do 2% to 2.5% as opposed to 1%?
For example, let's say you're going to buy a house and you're going to have $30,000 in it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
2% of $30,000 is $600. 2.5% would be $600 plus another $150, which is half of 1% or $300. So it would be $750. So if I'm going to be in a property for $30,000, I want the rent comps to be $600 to $750. Does that make sense?
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Now, the higher the price you go, the harder it is to do that. For example, it's hard to buy a house for $100,000 and be able to get $2,000 to $2,500 a month for it. Okay?
Okay.
It's just the higher the price, the harder it is to do. Think about this. If you're in a house for $300,000, it's hard to get $6,000 to $7,500 a month for it.
Okay.
Okay. So it works better on the lower price stuff, okay?
Okay.
Good. I hope that helped.
That does help a lot.
Excellent. I'm glad. So who's next?
Thank you very much.
So, Larry, if there's homes staying on the market from 60 to 90 days or maybe even longer, for let's say the price is $30,000. Would you have any concern about offering $5,000 for those houses and then unloading it after?
Yeah, I would think that if the house is listed for $30,000, $5,000 is a little low to expect to probably get that house. If you're going to be able to pay, you know, 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50%, 50% is $15,000, okay? You're
right.
not much more than 10% on it. So 60 to 90 days, that is a good sign. They're ready to come down some, but you just have to look at every individual deal. And who knows? It may be that you could pay $30,000. It may be that you could pay 20, which is 66%. It may be that you could pay, you know, 12 or whatever, or 15. I just don't know without looking at the deal. But just do your due diligence on the deal, analyze the deal, and see what you can pay. And even if you can pay $30,000, what they're asking, go ahead and make a lower offer. But just because it's listed for $30,000 doesn't mean you're going to offer $5,000 because you don't really know. As the market turns, as the market heats up like it has started doing, and there's a lot more buyers out there, okay, a lot more people trying to buy the deals, it's harder to steal a house. Now, yes, you can steal a house. You can get one for $5,000 every once in a while that's listed for, you know, maybe 30, but they're a lot farther and fewer in between, and it's going to be the dogs with fleas. So you're going to have to, especially if it's listed for a little more, you're going to have to pay a little more.
So if you did get it for 15, and it, you know, the thing that bothers me is that it's sitting at 30. And so if I buy it at 15, can I sell it for 20?
Well, what's your goal? What are you trying to do with it?
To wholesale it.
You're trying to wholesale it. Well, wholesaling is based on a couple of things. It's based on the amount of repairs and the after-repaired value. It's
okay.
also based on its highest and best use. Is its highest and best use as a fix and flip, or is its highest and best use as a rental property, or what? Just depends on what you're trying to do with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It
Good.
Does.
So if you're trying to wholesale a rental house, you're going to need to know what it'll rent for and what your average investor, and that's another thing you could ask a property manager. You know, hey, I've got a house that'll rent for $600. What's a typical landlord willing to pay for that house? And
okay.
then you know how much you can sell it for, and then by knowing how much you can sell it for, you'll know how much you can pay for it.
Okay.
And if it's a fix and flip, you just take the ARV times 0.7 minus your repairs minus what you want to make, and there's how much you can pay for it.
Okay.
But now remember, on the fix and flips, I don't recommend people analyze and sell houses or even do their own fix and flips on houses that are below $100,000. Because
okay.
it's harder to do a fix and flip on a lower priced house.
Right.
I mean, I've heard people talk about, I had somebody not too long ago send me a deal. Hey, I'm paying like $15,000 for this. It needs $5,000. The ARV is 50 or something or 60. You know, I'm going to do a fix and flip. I'm like, wait a minute. Now, how many lenders out there are going to make a loan less than $50,000? Very, 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 very few of them. So what's
yeah.
your chances of being able to retail this house for $50,000 or $60,000? Slim to none.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yep, totally.
Yeah, good. I hope that helped.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome. Who's next?
Hey, Larry, this is Forrest from Richmond.
What's up?
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Is Pops on the line?
Yeah,
yes,
here.
I am.
What's I'm happening? Here. How you doing, Dave?
Hey, Larry. Evening.
So I have a few questions to keep everybody busy. So we have been interviewing VAs on Upwork for the last several days, and several of the VAs, they want to go outside of Upwork and, you know, get paid through PayPal or, you know, some other form, and they offer a discounted rate. So in my opinion, I don't really see that much of a problem with it as long as we can accurately track the time. But what is your opinion on working outside of Upwork when you go and solicit through there?
Well, here's the thing, okay? I wouldn't mind going outside of Upwork, but I would wait till you see if they are going to work out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Just
mm-hmm.
don't hire them immediately outside of Upwork. Don't do that. But now, here's something you can do, okay? Here's something you can do. If you do want to go outside of Upwork or any of the other virtual assistant sites, there is a third-party software that you can get. Now, you're going to pay for it. It's not that much, but it's called HubStaff, HubStaff.com. And what HubStaff is you can hire your own person outside of Upwork or outside of any other place, and then they can log in, and it's just like Upwork where they're taking screenshots of their computer. You can limit their hours, you can keep track of their time, and you can also pay them any way you want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's called HubStaff, and I have used them, and I did like them because I went through the exact same thing. I had a VA or two that wanted to be paid outside of Upwork, and that's how I tracked them, was through HubStaff.com.
Okay.
good.
All right. My next question is, you told us several times, you know, to look for buyers, to contact agents in the area and look for people that can't quite qualify for traditional financing. My question is, what type of compensation do you offer them, the agents? I mean, for doing that, do you offer them any, or you just say, hey, do you got anybody, or do you, you know, they want their 3%? What do you find you run into?
Well, I mean, realistically, think about it. They're on commission only. They're not going to do something for nothing, okay?
That's what I'm asking.
They want to get paid. So, you know, what you could do is you could just say, here's the way I would approach it. I would say, hey, do you have any buyers that have maybe looked at houses like this, and you know they have $3,000 to $5,000 to $7,000, $10,000 to put down, but you know they can't go get a bank loan. Well, I tell you what, you send me that buyer, and I'll still pay you your 3%. And if you're selling a house for $70,000, that's $2,100. That's not bad. That's not bad for them. Or if you don't want to offer the 21, you could say, hey, I know that's a dead lead for you. You can't do anything with it. You know, what would you charge me just to hand me over their name and number, and I'll do all the work, and I'll pay you a referral fee? You know, they might say $500. They might say $250. They might say $1,000. That's what
basically negotiate your best deal.
There you go. But I would let them come up with the first number because I want them to feel good about it. And who knows, it could be the number they give you is less than what you were going to offer.
But
on the cheap houses, like the filthy riches deals, like a $30,000 house, you know, you might just go ahead and say, hey, I'll still pay you your 3%. That's $900, which is not a lot of money. But still, you know, you might want to let them pick the first number because you never know. Their number could be less.
Okay. All right, I got one more thing, but it's not really a question. I had a cash buyer call me this morning. This is for everybody. I had a cash buyer call me this morning. Was looking for a $40,000 or less house in Boone, Hickory, North Carolina area. So if anybody has any properties, let me know. And
in Hickory, North Carolina?
Hickory or Boone, that area.
Wow. I'm from Hildebrand, which is like 10 miles from Hickory.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know all those stomping grounds. So, yeah, I was just looking at some houses in Hickory just earlier before I got on the call. There's some HUD houses in Hickory.
All right.
So check that out. Just find out exactly what they're looking for and then go out there and fill an order because I can tell you, especially in wholesaling, it's much easier to find a house for a buyer than a buyer for a house.
That's true. All right. I'm done. Thanks.
All right, cool. Good to hear from you guys. Who's next?
Hey, Larry. Good evening. This is Fred from Wilmington.
Fred from Wilmington. What's up, buddy? How you been?
It's all good, man.
I hear you guys are rocking and rolling. You've been doing some business with some of the Inner Circle students that you met.
I heard
you guys are rocking it. That's awesome.
And there's three of us, and we got a couple of deals going, and it's good. It's fun. It's working.
Awesome. Congratulations. That's what we want to hear.
So my question has to relate to the notes, selling the notes. Right now we have a buyer that's going to give us 20% on to owner finance a house.
Right.
And I'm questioning whether or not we need to put her through the licensed loan originator process. And wondering, because this is the first deal we're doing in this entity, so that we know that we don't have to.
Right.
But does putting them through the process make the note more valuable?
The short answer is it depends on who your note buyer is. Now,
okay,
if your
Larry,
note buyer
Larry.
Is an institution, then they may be concerned about that. But if you also let them know that, you know, listen, we haven't done three. We're not out of compliance with Dodd-Frank. So they're going to do their own due diligence anyway. As long as you take a credit app and you check them out and, you know, you qualify them, most of the institutional note buyers I've seen, they want to see a credit score of 550 and up, 550 to 600, 600 up, something like that. You know, they want a good rental history. You could get the borrower to sign an authorization to release information, and you could get a VOR, verification of rent. You could get a verification of deposit, a VOD, find out how much money they have in the bank. And also you want to check their credit to make sure they pay their cars and stuff on time. And then that will make your note a lot easier to sell.
Right. But if I want to take the lazy man's way out, I'll just go through the licensed loan originator because they'll do all that stuff, right?
Well, they will do all that stuff, but listen, they're going to do what they have to do. Unless you give them some underwriting guidelines, like I want X credit score, I want no more than X times 30 days on X, you know, unless you give them the underwriting guidelines, they're just going to let you know if they're in compliance with Dodd-Frank, okay? And I don't know so much that that's the lazy way out, or only because I got to tell you, man, they can take forever. I love seller financing, but man, I'll be glad when the House Bill 5301 passes, so you can do 24 a year. That way I can do 24 in my LLC, 24 in my wife's LLC, 24 in my IRA, 24 in my wife's IRA, 24 in my Roth, 24 in my wife's Roth, 24 in my HSA, you know, and that's the route I'm going to go because I hate dealing. I hate it.
Okay.
I hate it, but listen, I can't get out here and preach, oh, don't worry about it, just fly under the radar, because I am Larry Goins, and I'm out mm-hmm. there. And people know who I am, and people look to me for advice. So I can't be telling people, man, just fly under the radar. You don't have to do that. But the fact of the matter is most people who do seller financing, they don't have an RMLO. They don't use it. Most of them don't even know what the heck an RMLO is. Most of them never even heard of Dodd-Frank. The who, what? They don't even know what it is. But because I'm preaching and teaching it, you know, I gotta do it by the book. So it is a pain. It is a pain. I've even recently suggested to a few people, you know, hey, just do a lease option for a couple of years.
Right.
You know, just do a lease option because if they're going to fail out, most of them are going to fail out within the first 12 to 24 months.
Right.
You know.
Well, as an alternative, as an alternative to having to deal with the Dodd-Frank, what if you were to buy the property? And so I would purchase the property in a trust.
In a land trust.
Land trust, correct. And then sell it in the land trust. I mean, it
you're
seems
sell
to
sell the land trust to your retail buyer. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm sorry. I don't want to sell the land trust to the retail buyer. I want to sell the property to them. The property is in a land trust, and then I'm going to sell it using a land contract.
Right.
But in order to qualify them, I can qualify them without going through
Yeah, I mean, there's all kind of ways around this stuff. But here's the thing. Let me just say this. And, guys, everybody listen. We got a lot of people in this call tonight, okay? Let me just say this. Everything works until you get caught. Okay? Everything will work until you get caught. Now, does it mean it won't work if you get caught? Not necessarily. You know, if you're doing it in a land trust and they don't happen to go out and look or want to find out how many land trusts you have or, you know, your LLC, how many of those are beneficiary and all that stuff. But everything will work until you get caught. And then that's when you got to worry about, well, are they going to come after my other deals? How many other deals did I do? What about my partners? What about my private money lenders? What about all this stuff? You know, what about Dodd-Frank? They can unravel this whole thing and charge me fines, you know, and penalties, and then I have to give them the property and all that stuff. So any and everything will work until you get caught. So that's the reason I just say, you know, whatever your level of risk is, whatever your level of risk is, you know, do whatever you feel comfortable with. You know, if you want to, run it by an attorney. Now, attorneys are deal killers, okay? But run it by your attorney if you want to, you know what I mean? So I always suggest people run stuff by their attorney. I always do. But, you know, then you have to use your own judgment, your own best judgment. You know, okay. It's kind of like this. I know this is a little bit advanced, but it just reminded me of this. If you do a prohibited transaction in your self-directed IRA, there is a 100% penalty, and the IRA is dissolved, okay? Which means you got to pay tax on it, and you got a 100% penalty. Now, if you do a prohibited transaction in your solo 401k, you only pay a penalty, and I believe it's 15%. I could be wrong, but I believe it's 15%. You only pay a penalty on the amount that was affected by that one transaction, and it is not dissolved, okay? So I've had tax attorneys tell me, if you're going to do any deals that you might get caught, only do them in your solo 401k, because if you get caught, the penalty is 15% of the amount affected, not of the whole thing. And the reason the IRS has that law is because individuals, this law was written for pension plans like 401k, but it followed over to solo 401k. The reason it was written is because individual employees have no control over what the employer does with their pension plan, their 401k. So even though you have a solo 401k, you can have it self-directed and do real estate, they still can't dissolve the whole thing and make you pay a huge penalty, okay? So I know that was kind of I kind of got off on a tangent there, but it was good information, and I thought of it, so I wanted to share it.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Anyway, I hope all that helped.
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
I think I'm going to put the originators.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a pain, but, you know, it's just a part of doing business. Within a year, we'll be able to do 24 of them in a year without an RMLO. Knock on wood. Right?
Yep.
Cool. Who's next?
Hey, Larry. This is Patty in Asheville.
Hey, Patty. What's up?
Hey. Got a contract on a mobile.
Congratulations.
Yep. Actually,
woo-hoo!
have two contracts on two mobiles. Here's my question. One of the mobiles, it's in South Carolina, and it has a well. And I was wondering, I have a well myself on my personal property. So I know a little bit about them, but I was wondering on, you know, seller finance deal, what type of due diligence should I be looking for doing on a property with a well?
So,
other than turning on all the faucets and making sure the water runs.
Yeah, since it's your first deal, I would do as much of inspection as you can. Is it close enough by where you can go look at it?
Yeah, we're going to go look at it, yeah.
Good. I want you to go look at it. I want you to take pictures, any repair areas, all mechanical items, every room. Look under the cabinets. If it's a mobile home, you need to walk under each window and stand
okay.
and jump up and down, like jump up and down on the balls of your feet. So, you know, if there's any, you know, if it's soft there, you'll be able to tell.
Okay.
Same thing in the bathrooms in front of the tub and on each side of the toilet. You want to make sure that the floor is not really weak there, and in front of each door, the front and the back door. And you also want to check out the neighborhood, pull your comps, pull your rent comps, drive the street, look at the area. If there are any other houses for sale or for rent in the area, you want to make sure that that you call about them, inquire about them, and then talk to them about your property, and get their feedback. You know, you could even walk around and talk to the neighbors. Hey, what do you know about this house? What's going on here? Anything I need to know about this house? Looks like I'm getting ready to buy it. What do I need to know? Do you know anybody's looking to own or finance a house? I can help them get into the house. You want to be able to pick your neighbors? So all that good stuff. And then you put out about 20 signs around the neighborhood and on that side of town. And then, you know, you start taking the calls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. As far as the well goes, if the water turns on, should I, like, get an inspection done on it?
Well, it used to be years ago a well had to meet certain criteria, and there was a lot of them that had to be upgraded. I remember when I was in my early 20s, I made a living going around and upgrading wells for realtors that had closings that had to be upgraded. But now they all should be done, and not only that, but you don't really, it's not really like turning the water on. You just need to turn the electricity on to be able to turn the pump on.
Right, right.
And most of them now have a submersible pump. They don't have a jet pump anymore. They have a submersible pump. And I would just turn it on and run it for a little while and check and see what it smells like.
Okay.
Larry, do you recommend a DHEC inspection test of the water?
I haven't done that in the past, no. I mean, but I haven't done it, but you very well could if you wanted to. If that's something you feel like you need to do, absolutely you should. But I haven't done that. And I haven't had any problems.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm not saying that you will or will not, but I'm just saying that I haven't done it. But that was a good question. Anyway, I hope that helped.
Yep, definitely.
Good, good. Who's next?
Hey, Larry, this is Josiah from Townville. How are you?
What's going on, buddy? How you been?
Doing well, doing well. Haven't made any offers yet, but we're getting really close to that point.
You will.
Looking on sites like... she's actually out of town. She had to go to, but I'm not sure if she's on or not. She knew about the call tonight, but she might be busy. It's a trip for her up for our other job that she had to take.
Okay.
So.
I'm with you. Well, tell her I said hi. So what's your question?
Thank you. I will. We have seen a lot of houses called that were labeled pre-foreclosure.
Right.
And we're just wondering how those work and, like, how you can make an offer on them and are they good ones to make offers on?
Well, here's the thing about a pre-foreclosure. It just basically means that the homeowner, the borrower, is in default of the loan. Okay? They're in other words, they're in foreclosure, but they still own it, and the foreclosure hasn't been finalized yet. Okay? There's three ways you can buy a house that is a foreclosure. You can buy it as the pre-foreclosure, which means they're in default, which is what you're talking about, and you could buy it still directly from the homeowner, okay? And that typically requires a short sale, meaning that the bank would need to agree to take a reduced payoff in the loan amount. The second time you could buy a foreclosure is actually at the sale, okay? At the courthouse steps, for example. In other words, whenever the bank is there, they're going to bid. And then the third way is what's called an REO, real estate owned. It's a bank-owned property. It's already gone through foreclosure. The borrower lost it. Now the bank owns it. and they put it on the market, and you buy it directly from them, whether it be a HUD house, a VA house, or a house owned by Bank of America or Wells Fargo or anybody like that. So those are the three times. Now, getting back to your question, are the pre-foreclosures, is that a good type of property to bid on or to make an offer on? It can be, as long as you're working with a realtor to do it, and the realtor is dealing with anything like the short sale or contacting the bank or any of that stuff. Because I hate short sales. They take a long time. I don't want to have to deal with it. But if it's something where the borrower has it listed with the realtor, then, or maybe the borrower's already moved out and the realtor's handling all that, then it would be okay. Now, here's one thing that I don't do. If the person still lives there, and in other words, if the pictures in the listing show furniture, this is just me. I'm not saying you or anybody else needs to do this, but this is just me. If the house still has furniture in it, and which means they're living there, I just move on. I don't like bidding on and buying houses that the people live in it. Because who knows, during my due diligence, I may find out something that I don't like and I need to cancel my contract. And whenever people are living there, it's their life you're messing with. They've already, you know, we've already found another place. We've already put up a deposit. We're packing. We got the moving company. I already took 3 days off of work. And now you're telling me you're not going to buy my house? You know, so I don't don't want to have to deal with that. So, you know, that's the reason that I don't make offers on houses that have furniture in them. Did that help?
All right, that sounds good. Yes, sir, that does. I appreciate that. And one more question is, I found a house by talking to a REO realtor. He said it has not gone up on the market yet. Would that be a good one to look into? Because I have heard from Nathan that you kind of want to get out of your best bet is for houses that have been on the market for a long time or have had a recent price drop.
What Nathan is talking about is it's easier to get a deep discount if the house has been on the market for a while. It is easier to get a discount.
Okay.
But if the deal is already a decent deal, then that's okay. So I would just have them send over all of the information that you need on the property, and then you could take a look at it and analyze it, and who knows, maybe it is already a decent deal. I bought a double-wide mobile home not so long ago, a couple of months ago, where it hadn't even been put on the MLS yet. The realtor told me about it and said, I'm working with this seller. It was a mobile home lender, and they were either going to, you know, if they couldn't find a buyer this week, they were going to put it on the MLS. They were actually going to put carpet in it and put it on the MLS and raise the price about $20,000 or $30,000. So, but we went back and forth, back and forth, and I ended up buying it. I think I ended up paying $31,000 for it or something. But it was a nice mobile home, and it just needed carpet in one or two rooms. And outside of that, it was in good shape. So, you can do that, but you never know whether it's a good deal or not until you analyze the deal.
Okay, good.
Good. I hope that helped.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Excellent. You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And thanks for being on the call today. I appreciate that. That's good. All right. Who's next?
Hey, Larry. This is Adam in Asheville. I've got a question for you.
Adam, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, doing well. Actually, I have two questions. My first one is I've been looking around, and I see some of these houses that are listed with Hubzoo. And that turns it's just an auction place. And when you call them up, it's like a call center. They tell you just to call an agent at the local area anyways. And what's your opinion? Should I just skip these listings completely?
Well, Yeah, typically, even if you put in a bid on Hubzu, the bid, you put your realtor down and stuff, but even if you do that, if the bid is not within a range that they have preset, it's just going to kick it back anyway. It's going to say your bid was not high enough. So, you could talk to the realtor about it and see. It's my experience that they don't want to negotiate very much until it has been on the market for, 60 to 90 days, something like that. But yeah, I wouldn't discount it, or I wouldn't avoid it, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I just feel if I'm going to call about a house, I might as well talk to the realtor or the listing agent directly.
Exactly.
Anyways.
Nobody's going to know more about it than the listing agent.
Yeah, that's been my total experience. Okay, thank you. And second question, it's about HVACs. You love to say that when someone moves out or the HVAC unit gets stolen or someone moves and takes it with them. So if the HVAC unit is stolen, does that mean that the outside unit is stolen? Does it mean that the inside unit is also taken? Typically, when one is stolen, what parts of the HVAC are taken?
Typically, it's just the outside unit, and it's not the exchanger inside. It's not that. It's typically just the outside. Although I have seen a homeowner take both the inside and the outside part, but typically it's just the outside. But as long as you have a due diligence period, even if the outside unit is missing, you could still have an HVAC person go over and take a look at it inside and out and tell you exactly what you need to put in it to make it whole again and make it work. And any HVAC person that you get to go look at it, you also want to ask them if they ever have used units and or if they can get you a used unit. Most HVAC people do have a used unit sitting around somewhere, and it may work, it may not work. It may even be too big for the house, but you don't want one that's too small, but too big is okay. But you want to talk to them about that, because a lot of HVAC guys, they'll put in a new unit, say in a house, where maybe the unit in there is only 5 or 6 years old, but the homeowner is adding on a big room addition, and they had to upgrade the unit from, say, a 2-ton to a 3-ton, and now the 2-ton, it's a perfectly good unit, but, the homeowner needs a 3-ton now because of the room addition. So the HVAC guy would just put it in a warehouse or put it in their garage or whatever, and they could sell that to you. I've had units installed for as low as $1,200. So just keep that in mind. Everybody on the call, keep that in mind as well. So because when we do sell these nicer houses, like the double-wide mobile homes, we make sure that they're livable. So if something like HVAC or wiring or plumbing needs to be done, we do take care of that. So I hope that helped, Adam.
It does. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Who's next?
Hey, Larry. It's Kent from Oregon. I have a couple questions.
Sure.
First one is, I've been contacting realtors and making offers of 25% of listing price.
Uh-huh.
And all of them are just getting rejected.
Right.
Is there something I should be doing?
Well, let me ask you a question. Are you analyzing the deal to determine how much you can pay based on the numbers, or are you just throwing out a 25% offer?
Mainly a 25% offer.
Okay. I would suggest you look at the deal. What are your plans to do with the deal?
I'd like to own or finance it. That's the riches.
Okay. You're going to own or finance it. So just run your comps. Run your comps for your rent to determine what the house will rent for. Figure a payment comparable to that. And then, on the low end of that, figure a payment. and then you'll know about how much you can pay for the house. Now, on the Filthy Rich's low-priced houses, if you're really buying what I call a true Filthy Rich's house, which is, you know, a really cheap house that it may or may not be livable. If it's not livable, it's going to be close, but it's not, you know, livable yet. But those houses, you could pay, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for them. And I've had some that I've paid close to list, and I've had some that I've paid 20% of list. We did one a while back. It was listed for $44,000. We paid $8,000 for it. So you just never know. But yeah, how many offers have you made so far?
Oh, probably around 15 or more.
Okay. 15 should be how many you're making every couple of days.
Okay.
All right? Just so you know. I wouldn't let someone discourage me because, you know, you've made 15 offers. I wouldn't let that discourage me. But I would start looking and analyzing each individual deal to be able to tell how much you can pay for it.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Awesome. Awesome. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry, this is Garland Best from Dallas, Texas.
What's going on, buddy? I was just in your city today.
You were?
Well, yeah, I had a I flew from San Bernardino to Dallas to Charlotte.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'll be back out there this weekend.
Right. I'll be there.
Good.
Do you have your buying criteria on the Inner Circle anywhere?
Let me think. Well, it really kind of depends on what you're doing. But, you know, if you're wholesaling, you know, you just take the ARV times 0.7 minus repairs and minus what you want to make, and there is your how much you can pay for it.
Okay.
And with the seller financing, you're just pulling rent comps, and then based on how much you can get down in the area, what realtors and other people tell you, and using the Filthy Riches and the Ultimate Buy Machine Analyzer, then you, you're able to tell how much you can pay for it. So as far as having it written down, I don't think I do. I do have it in just about all my courses. I do have the analysis.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if I hired a VA, what should be the first thing I have her do?
Well, it depends. What do you need? What's your biggest challenge right now? What do you need most of?
I would say the biggest challenge is, you know, since you recommend putting in, you know, so many offers, I think that's the biggest thing that needs to be done.
Well, then maybe that's what you want to have them do. Maybe you want to have them identifying and analyzing properties to make offers on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they can just give them the, I mean, access to the MLS, or how would they be able to do
no,
that?
No. We don't even have access to the MLS. You don't need that. But what you do is you just give them a search criteria, tell them what you want them looking for. Or if you want to spend a little bit of time up front and you just go in and set up an account at like Realtor.com or Zillow.com, and then you save the searches, and you save the properties, and then they go in and analyze those deals. They could put them on a spreadsheet. They could email them to you or whatever, and then you could call the realtor and submit the bid. Or they could email an offer to them. Either way, however you wanted to do it. But even if you did email an offer, I would suggest you follow up with a phone call.
Right.
Instead of just an email out of the blue, an email offer out of the blue with no phone call.
Okay.
Good. Does that help?
Yep. That's good. Thanks.
Excellent. Good, good. Who else has a question? You guys have had some really good questions tonight. It's been some really good conversation. A lot of people got a lot of stuff going on. Anybody else have a question?
Going once.
Going once. Somebody else said it first. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what is your 3-day going to be on this week?
What is my 3-day going to be about?
Yeah.
Man, it's going to be about everything. Wholesaling, retailing, marketing, seller financing, analyzing, negotiating, every way to close, every way to fund, self-directed IRAs, asset protection, entity structuring, tax strategies, automation. That's all that comes to mind, but that's a lot.
Okay.
And I'm teaching 100% of it, personally.
Okay. Wow.
It's all me.
And when is your next 3-day course?
It's this weekend in Dallas, Texas. And the one after that is September 9th, 10th, and 11th, I believe. And that's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, good.
Yep, you can find out more information at LarryGoinsLive.com. Or just call the office, they'll tell you about it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. Does anybody else have a question? Well, it's been a really good call tonight. You guys have had a lot of good questions.
I got a question, Larry. This is Forrest again.
Sure, go ahead.
So, you know, with doing the Craigslist ads, you know, we've heard several different theories on, you know, how you should do these ads and, you know, how many times a day and so forth. But how fancy do you really, you know, need to have these ads? Or do they just need to be posted with a decent heading, or should they be? Remember, you know, when Postlets used to allow you to export that ad to Craigslist and it would come up real fancy looking and everything, but
yeah,
and now it's kind of hard to, you know, find out how to do that. It's all coding and everything. Do you just place an ad, or do you have, you know, somebody kind of make it fancy?
Yeah, no, we don't. We just use a regular ad with regular pictures in it.
Yeah, okay. That's
yeah,
fine.
We just do that. And I've seen some people on Craigslist, they'll run like 10 ads back to back to back. And to me, that's
mm-hmm.
just annoying because you're scrolling
mm-hmm.
down and you see all of their ads and you know it's the same one. That's
mm-hmm.
just annoying to me. So, yeah, I would just check your ads every you know, every week to make sure they didn't get ghosted. Ghosted just means they got shut down.
Right.
Yeah. But that's it.
Would you do an ad every day for a property or just...
You know, I don't really see the need to do it every day. But, you know, just depending on how many ads there are, you could go in and, like, do a search of owner financing or do a search of... fixer-upper or whatever, and, you know, some of the keywords that are in your ad that would be in other ads, and see how far yours gets pushed down. If there's a ton of ads that come up and yours gets pushed down on page 2 or 3, then you might want to do an ad every couple of days. But most areas don't have that.
Can I jump in on this? This is Meg in Charlotte. And,
hey, Meg.
Hey, Larry, I've been enjoying listening to all the commentary tonight. Great call, as always.
Good.
I just wanted to say something about, I had a Craigslist ad that I posted, and I ended up deciding that I didn't like it that much. So I didn't take it down, but I posted another ad in the same market. And I'm still getting traffic on the first ad that's now 60 days old.
Wow.
Which... You know, I only know because I had changed the subject line on that thing.
And where was the ad? Was it in Florence or Sumter?
It was in Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Okay. So there's probably not a whole lot of traffic down there meaning there's not a whole lot of people posting ads, so your ad is still pretty close to the top probably.
Yeah, but I was astonished that it's even still up 60 days after I posted
expire.
It.
I don't know how many days it takes for an ad to expire, but they do expire after a certain amount of time.
I thought it was 30 days. That's what I thought was so funny.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Anyway, it's just going to depend on where you're posting.
I think you're right. It does depend on where you're posting. That's why I mentioned if you're in an area where you get a lot of ads, you want to renew it and post multiple ads more frequently. Good. Thanks for chiming in on that, Meg. That was good. Does anybody else have a question? All right, girls and boys. I really appreciate your business. I appreciate you being on. Thank you so much. And what's this people hanging up while I'm talking at the end? But I really appreciate you guys. Thank you very much for being on. Just know you can always call me, email me, whatever it is. I'll hit you back. I emailed 3 or 4 Inner Circle students today. And even though I was traveling and in the air most of the day, I did it in between flights. But just know that you can always reach out to me. And Brian, I'll be calling you tomorrow about your deal. So,
all right, thank you.
I really appreciate you guys. Thank you very much. And let me know if there's anything you need. And I hope you guys have a great evening.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Good night, Larry. Thanks.
You too, Larry. Thanks. Good night.